Well, welcome everyone. We welcome you to the Wells Fargo TMT Conference for 2016. For those of you who I don't know, I'm Jennifer Fritzsche. I'm the Senior Telecom Equity Analyst. I guess, wow, timing is everything. Well, we've all had a lot of scenarios play out unlike we thought, and a clear November surprise. It's a great time to digest what's going to happen in the next coming days. Of course, I am referring to our great Chicago Cubbies and their recent World Series win. But I'm so happy to have at this conference opening up one of the biggest baseball fans I know in John Stephens, the CFO of AT&T. So welcome, John. I'm going to come join you. So welcome.
Thank you, Jennifer. We appreciate you inviting us.
So, you know, politics aside, John, maybe just getting the question out of the way. Obviously, a big night last night with the Republicans now taking the presidential seats and both sides of Congress. Am I right in saying that it's early to digest? I know, but typically in a Republican administration, they are very pro-business and favor many of the things you're already doing, infrastructure, investment. What are your thoughts?
Well, first of all, Jennifer, once again, thank you for having us here. And let me get a couple of the normal items out of the way. Today's conversations may include some forward-looking statements, some statements that have risk and may not occur in reality. So looking forward, we suggest you go to our website and our other public filings. With regard to the election, it was a long night. We're all up and captivated by the activity last night. From a company perspective, we really look forward to working with President-elect Trump and his transition team. His policies and his discussions about infrastructure investment, economic development, and American innovation all fit right in with AT&T's goals. We've been the leading investor in this country for more than 5 years running. And our Time Warner transaction is all about innovation and economic development, consumer choice, and investment in infrastructure with regard to providing a great 5G mobile broadband experience. So we look forward with optimism to working with the leadership and providing benefits to consumers and to our shareholders.
Perfect. Well, some other big news. You've also been very, very busy on the Time Warner front. Maybe let's go on to that question. I guess the main question I get from investors is what drove AT&T's desire to own content?
Well, I think the real key here is, simply put, mobile is video and video is mobile. We're seeing that happen every day with the traffic we carry. And we were interested in being able to marry with our great distribution systems, our great broadband, wireless, wireline, our ability to deliver video, marry that with a premium content player. And that certainly is Time Warner. So we feel very good about that. You've seen us work with DTV Now and other over-the-top type investments and opportunities. We feel like having the content opportunity along with our distribution will eliminate the friction that usually takes place between independent companies trying to do innovation. It will accelerate innovation. It will generate consumer choice, new products for consumer, and it ultimately will generate investment. When you put all that together, it's a great transaction for our customers and for our shareholders, as well as for the American economy.
If we look at the regulatory approval, you know, the spread is right now, actually it's improving with the market today. Just going back and forth with my ARB team, it's about 35% probability the way TWIX is going to open today. Can you talk a little bit about your thoughts on the approval process? Am I correct in saying, I guess, two things? One, the FCC really shouldn't be involved in this deal because it likely will not involve the transfer of licenses. And then secondly, am I also correct in saying the case law is on your side here? Because it is a vertical integration, it would be precedent-setting.
As you'd expect, we're going to follow all the laws and regulatory requirements that a transaction like this requires, whether they be here in the U.S., in Europe, or in any of the Latin American countries. So that goes without saying. With regard to a vertical integration transaction like this, you're right. The history is pretty clear. In our industry, there's nothing that we can find on record of the DOJ ever denying one of these mergers, and quite frankly, there's good reason for that because it brings consumer choice, it brings innovation, and it will benefit consumers. So from that perspective, we're optimistic. We look forward to working through the process, but as always, the law and the facts will control that process. With regard to any of the other agencies, it will depend on whether any licenses are transferred or not, and we'll determine that at a later date as Time Warner goes through their process. But if no licenses are transferred, and we do not need any of the licenses, the requirements will change with regard to those facts.
Got it. We do have a lot of fixed income people in the room here, so I'm going to ask some questions on the financing and leverage.
Sure.
This will clearly play a role here. What are the actual mechanics to get to the 2.5 leverage times leverage at the end of year one? And will it require any sales, asset sales? I have a few questions after that.
So if you remember, first of all, let me give kind of a point in time. End of year one is end of 2018. So we've got a full, 26 months from then. That's one point I'd make. Secondly, all the cash accumulation that might be done or generation that might be done, not only by AT&T but by Time Warner through that period, will be available to manage the debt down. Third, I would suggest to you, if you look at the combined companies, the growth in cash flows, we're looking at EBITDAs in the range of $60 billion, cash from operations in the range of $45 billion on an annual basis, so a significant amount of cash to manage debt load very, very prudently, very easily. With regard to the net debt to EBITDA ratio, certainly we expect to grow EBITDA. We expect to grow revenues and profitability, and certainly that helps in the mechanics of getting there. We will continue to look at our balance sheet. Right now it's a $400 billion total asset balance sheet. Post-transaction will be in that $500 billion range. And certainly we'll continue to look at assets that we can monetize, as we have over time, and we will focus the use of our cash on debt repayment and moving towards more traditional rates, not only at the end of 18, but at 4 years out when we will strive and expect to get to that 1.8 times net debt to EBITDA range. Feel really good about this collection of assets coming together. That can really generate a lot of cash.
How about, AT&T does have a lot of paper out there. To put $40 billion more, I guess, how do you feel about that? Do you feel like that, what are your people telling you in terms of the demand? I mean, we've had some amazing success stories with you in the capital markets, especially in the debt markets.
We continue to feel very good. As you know, we got bridge facilities from two banks, and we had opportunities for many others, so we felt really good about that before we announced the transaction. The conversations and the activities we had since only lead us to believe that we can be very successful in syndicating out the bridge and getting financing. The uniqueness of the time and place we have in today's economy is, one, the marketplace has become rather global. We have over $25 billion, I believe, of foreign-denominated bonds out there right now. We've been very successful over the last 5 years in hitting, in, if you will, going to different markets and utilizing different markets, and have a very good reputation. Secondly, the European economy and really the rest of the world economy is very tepid, to say the least, and so rates on a global basis are very low, which make our bonds very attractive even at the low rates we borrow at, especially with a reliable player, someone who's been in business for 140 years and hasn't missed a bond payment, interest payment, or dividend payment. It's a pretty good record, so we feel very good about it. Our conversations with the bankers and the evaluators of the debt markets have left us with great confidence that we can handle this very, very methodically and very prudently.
Let's shift to another acquisition. You're now, 16 months into DTV?
Yes.
Is that right? So you've done a lot of the heavy lifting here. And from your seat, how do you think it compares to where you thought you would have been in July of 15, ahead of expectations when the deal was closed?
It's a great question, Jennifer. On the cost management side, I think we're ahead. Team's done a really great job. They really got after it, and we're ahead. As you can see, our customer base is more and more weighted towards satellite in our video business, and so we get some of the savings simply from the existing contracts. But the team's done a great job of renegotiating contracts and getting this and driving costs out and getting the savings there, as well as, and this is one of the things that that beats expectations, the cost side from that, I believe we're beating expectations, but we're also getting all the rights to the video with regard to mobile, digital, stacking, all the things that are necessary to put together a great DTV Now product or put together a lot of other opportunities, a lot of things we'd like to evaluate. So from a merger integration piece, it's going well. From a revenue generation piece, as you know, we kept those expectations tempered. Mm-hmm. We knew it would take about a year to get our call centers and our retail stores and our prem techs trained and understanding how to do both with regard to a satellite and a broadband install, how to sell both a video and a wireless package, a bundle. What we are seeing now is the attach rates to our video sales climbing. Feel good about it. It's still early. We thought it would take a year to get things going, and it has, but it's going well. So we're optimistic about that. The biggest challenge for us across the business, and including in our entertainment group, is we've got a really tepid economy. Mm-hmm. The U.S. economy is just really slow. Certainly, maybe much better than many of the other major countries' economies, but it is not on fire by any stretch.
What about, just sticking with DirecTV, and then I will get to DirecTV Now, content costs? You know, not to be a negative Nancy, but some naysayers might say, well, AT&T hasn't felt the Hollywood love, and that's why they're going down the direction of Time Warner. Can you talk about content costs, if those have, because it's kind of been removed from the conversation a little bit versus when the deal was first announced. Is that because you just can't announce a lot of these deals you've already inked? Or how has that progressed?
Well, I think there have been a lot of announcements, mainly by the content providers themselves. We'll let them take the lead on that.
Okay.
No, I mean, our content costs, we have managed those well. We're hitting our targets. Time Warner is about premier content, mm-hmm. The best brand, the best full source of over-the-top with HBO. There are networks with TBS, TNT, CNN, Cartoon Network.
I was going to say, I have a few Cartoon Network watchers.
Yeah. There's studios, mm-hmm. you know, with Warner Brothers, their library. It's all about, you know, premier. And as I said earlier, you know, mobile is all going video, and video is all going mobile. And we've got a great distribution capability, both, you know, satellite, wired, and specifically wireless. Now we're going to have, you know, the premier content company. It's a great match.
And as we look at that, and it brings in the discussion of DirecTV Now, you know, your chairman recently announced a $35 price point. We haven't seen that hit the market for DirecTV Now with 100 channels. You know, almost some would call this a loss leader, an aggressive price point here. Is it, one, still going to be profitable? And then are you willing to accept these thin margins? Because the obvious next question is, what about worrying about cannibalizing your own base?
Yeah, so first and foremost, this product is targeted towards those 20 million or more households that don't have a pay TV subscription today. And so it's an underserved market, for at least from our perspective, in the sense of what we provide. If you think about, from my perspective, you think about what we did in our decisions with regard to going to the prepaid market some years ago with our investment in Leap and our new product Cricket, and the tremendous success it's had, it's because we took our great networking capabilities and offered it to a customer set, a value-conscious customer set in the wireless space that didn't have that availability to our networks and services. It's that kind of thought process that goes into changing the game and innovating with DTV Now and being able to provide our quality of products, our quality of content collection into customers that today we do not have common market shares like we do with our full video product. Secondly, when you think about these customers, a lot of them are multiple dwelling unit. A lot of them we don't over-index on either the broadband, the provision, or on the wireless provision. So this gives us an opportunity not only to provide them a great service with DTV Now, but also the opportunity to get to know these customers and bundle other services. I would suggest to you that we are interested in generating a lot of interest in the product, getting a lot of customers on and learning from it, and learning how we can improve it and how we can make changes to it. And with any product launch, there's always an entry-level launch, and then as we add features, as we add different content, you will see different price points. But we're excited about the opportunity. We believe it's going to give us the real opportunity to grow our customer base and, quite frankly, to really start this new innovation phase to provide consumers choice.
With this, John, is it fair to say that AT&T views the critical bundle as wireless first, then broadband pipe, then video? Or how do you, I mean, it's a wireless strategy, clearly, but how do you view the critical bundle?
We are seeing video and being a key point of attachment.
Okay.
To wireless, and as our traffic patterns go, you're seeing so much of the traffic over our wireless network, over all our networks, being video. But let's don't dismiss at all our investment in fiber, our investment in our wired footprint. We have over 3 million new fiber builds that we're marketing to. Out of our 12.5 million fiber to the prem commitment, we're going to continue down that path. We're getting very good results, customers buying speeds. If you look at the recently filed third quarter Q, you can see what we're doing with our IP broadband. Customer base is growing. Our ARPUs are growing. Customers are getting a great product for a great price. So we're seeing success with that, too. So it's about broadband, both wired and wireless, and it's about video, and it's about having distribution, whether it be wired, whether it be wireless, whether it be satellite, or whether it be retail, through our vast retail distribution network, to take this collection of products and services and bundle them together or sell them individually, but we prefer to bundle them together and give great service and great innovative products to customers at real good value, because that's how you retain them, that's how you keep them.
I wanted to, you mentioned the fiber. You have a commitment to the FCC to build 12.5 million homes by the midpoint of 19, I believe. Am I right in saying that fiber investment is good for multifaceted things, SDN, 5G eventually? I guess the question is, would you do more faster? Or, fiber to me seems critical to a lot of what you're doing longer term.
Yeah, so a couple of points. I mean, one, we already, yes, we would be willing to do more.
Mm-hmm.
Let me just say that for the
start
to directly answer your question. I think the team would tell you they're working pretty fast, pretty quickly, pretty efficiently now. And so I won't suggest we're would accelerate anything from the standpoint of they're getting everything you can get done today very efficiently. But let's step back and make sure we understand that back in 2012, we announced Project DIP.
Yes.
And we put connected 1 million customer locations on the business side since then with fiber. And when we went into those buildings, we not only took fiber to the buildings, we not only put the electronics, the EMUX, the gear in the basements, but in many of those cases, we also ran DASs, we also ran wireless capabilities. When we built that out, we made sure if we were running close to a cell site, we were going to do the backhaul.
Mm-hmm.
So we've had this plan about fiber investment for a number of years. This 12.5 million commitment that we made to the FCC with regard to the DirecTV transaction is just another step in that process. You know, it's a commitment made, and it's going to be a commitment kept. Would I expect that we'd possibly do more than 12.5? That wouldn't surprise me at all.
Okay. Sticking on that spending, with Project DIP, you also spent in those 3 years between 13 and 15, I think, $8 billion incremental to wireless capital spending. How do you think of your wireless CapEx, this capital investment now? Because, again, not to be a negative Nancy, but there are some people who believe that AT&T has underspent in that regard.
Well, a couple of things I'd point out. One, we've got a better spectrum position than anybody else. So remember, when you spend money on spectrum, just because the accountants like me put it in the spectrum line, we don't put it in the CapEx line, it doesn't mean it doesn't count towards the ability to be efficient with your CapEx.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So with the AWS-3 spectrum we bought, the WCS spectrum we've had, and if you will, quite frankly, the Leap transaction, where we really took in a whole lot of dormant spectrum that they had, we've made significant investments as well as building out our network. So we continue to invest in that, and we will continue that. Secondly, I will tell you, the network team in both pieces of the wireless and the wireline, but specifically the wireless, are moving towards much more what I'll call software-defined networks, much more efficient networks where we've made investments over the years on whether it's directing cell site dishes on the towers to make the antennas more effective, whether it's in the base stations and making them software enabled to upgrade as opposed to physically replace the boxes.
Okay.
They can just software update them. They've done a lot of those kinds of things. So we're going to be able to really keep a top quality, high level network on a much more efficient basis than many others because of the investments we've made over the last 5 years. Not just because we're saying we can do it, we've actually done the work and made the investments already.
And for spectrum, I know there's not a lot you can say, but I think Randall's described it as stranded capital, where it is an asset, and you very much agree with that thought. So the thought that AT&T has to spend is not with the spectrum assets you now have in place, not talking about what you're involved in maybe getting in the future. You feel pretty good.
Yeah, we do. We feel very good. We're certainly always looking at that, but we are in a very good place, particularly with the AWS and the WCS, and getting that spectrum, so to speak, into use is in our plans and our goals.
Mm-hmm.
It's already been paid for, so it won't show up as CapEx, but it will be a tremendous expansion. Think about 40 megahertz out of 100 megahertz in service. You can understand the expansion
right.
of the capacity, at least directionally, that's available there on something we've already paid for.
I wanted to shift to wireless competition because this is a question I get a lot. I'm sure you do too. We're going to hear from all four national providers here at this conference over the next 2 days. You're on the hot seat right now. Can you talk a little bit about what you're seeing out there? AT&T has been in protecting their base mode. Is that going to continue?
Thoughts? Yeah, I think our strategy has been proving out to be the right one. It is a very competitive environment.
Mm-hmm.
It is promotional. You saw that at the end of the third quarter with
yep.
Some of the free iPhone promotions. I'll say it this way. We made a decision to focus on the profitable customers that make sense and not chase unprofitable customers with $600 promos that were real common out there. With our prepaid offerings, we've been able to grow our branded phone base continually and healthily without getting irrational in our promos. It is a very competitive environment, but quite frankly, through that, if you just look at our third quarter results, the team was phenomenal. Our postpaid churn was 1.05. Our phone churn was around 0.9. You know, our margins were record levels at 50%. And we did all of this while we're going through a 2G network transition. So, yes, it's competitive. Yes, we're going to be deliberate, careful, and focused on long-term values for our shareholders and of our customers. But the team is performing at an exceptional level and putting up record results for us. So it is competitive, but we're real proud of the results the team has produced.
And as part of the plan, certainly the bundling offering, you're willing, for the lower-end post-pay customer, you're willing to trade that customer for a higher-end prepay who's paying you more ARPU. Is that how you look at it?
Well, we want every customer.
Right.
We don't, and you know, we'd love it. It's just some of our post-paid flip phone or post-paid 2G customers, you know, they're paying us $30 a month, and there's a promo to match them at $600. It takes almost 2 years just to get your promo cost, your subsidy cost back. And so that's not going to be our focus. If you look at our prepaid market, we're, you know, our ARPUs on those can be about $40, $42. And you have, you know, no billing and collection cost or risks. You have no subsidies.
Yep.
You have a great network, so we're having really good improvement in churn and good stickiness from those customers. And it's a customer base that historically hadn't been the focus of our sales efforts. So it's a fresh customer base for us, and it's one that over time will give us the opportunity to migrate customers up to full services packages as their circumstances change, as their needs change. So for us, it's a great investment today. It's a profitable customer base today. If you're wondering, how do you get those margins up this much year over year for the last 2 years? In part, it's because the dramatic improvement in the Cricket business, in the Leap business that we took over 2.5 years ago and have incorporated it, integrated into our networks, into our operations, and the team has just made it a very reasonably profitable business that just wasn't on a standalone basis.
And as you, another part of it also is you're beyond the heavy comps of EIP. I mean, others wish they, you know, I guess you were criticized for moving quickly, but then you went through and now those comps get easier, right, in terms of service revenue. So that ARPU is an easier comp. Is
we did. We were one of the leaders in the what we call Next,
mm-hmm.
or the equipment installment plans, or moving towards making sure customers understood exactly what the hardware, what the handset cost, and how that was impacting them. Yes, we were a leader in that, and we think we did the right thing. And when you look at churn,
yes.
it certainly seems to be showing up.
Mm-hmm.
And remember, the ARPU we're getting, the cash ARPU we're getting from customers on a monthly basis is growing when you take into account our service and our Next payments. So our customers like it, and that combined business is growing.
And if you look at, I mean, I assume your most important metric is free cash flow as you sit down, taxes, free cash flow. But if we look at the components of that, just in the simplistic form, EBITDA less CapEx less taxes, I'm not asking you to predict tax reform or anything like that, but and not looking at Twix, but how do you feel about that free cash flow sustainability longer term?
Well, I mean, we've had this conversation in the sense of we feel really good about the standalone AT&T, I'll say it that way, free cash flow, the continued payoff of the automation and the streamlining products and projects that came out of Project Agile, the things like digital first and those transformations, our project we call Halo, high automation, low head, overhead efforts in our enterprise space. Those continue to go well. If you look at what we're doing with network function virtualization and software-defined networks, which not only lower capital costs, but also streamline operating costs, reduce truck rolls, reduce hands-on handling of orders, all of that, we feel really good about the ability to improve cash flow from that. And as you see, the rest of the merger integration synergies come to realization, which we're confident they will, with regard to DTV.
Mm-hmm.
Those three bundles are well over $5 billion, could probably approximate different pieces of it, could approximate well over $5 billion. So we have an easy path, what we believe, over time to get the standalone AT&T into the $20 billion free cash flow range. And then you add on the significant cash flow of Time Warner and the ability to grow that. And remember, Time Warner has been using much of their cash to buy back shares.
Sure.
That can be
sure.
repurposed to pay down debt.
Yeah.
And so we feel very good about our long-term cash opportunities.
I asked you about wireless competition. I didn't really ask you about the competitive landscape on the wireline side. I mean, I think we have to address Comcast here, right? You're both moving to combine distribution and content. But unlike Comcast, you have a big wireless pipe. You have national video distribution. How do you feel like that gives you an edge? I mean, as you look at Comcast and the strategy, not, or Charter, let's bring them both in, but how do you look at cable as a competitor?
Well, I think you hit the key. When we bring that content in, excuse me, we're a national broadband, wireless-based broadband provider. We're a national content provider. We have national distribution with regard to retail capabilities. So we have an ability to do things that others won't, and that'll accelerate innovation. That'll give customers choice. We'll certainly compete strongly with cable. but we really believe that's the real benefit of the Time Warner transaction, and the key differentiator there is wireless. We also believe it'll put us in a different competitive position with the rest of the wireless industry. And remember, this innovation that'll come out of the content and distribution assets being brought together will certainly benefit consumers, but it's also going to benefit our enterprise businesses in better ability to advertise, better ability to provide service. If you think about the Internet of Things and healthcare and having the ability to transmit video very efficiently and effectively, it's going to help healthcare service providers to provide care to individuals in remote locations or in outside of that doctor's office. All of those kinds of things, all of these different aspects of this innovation are really positive. But we do believe that our collection of assets, wired, satellite, wireless, and content, are going to provide us a unique opportunity to innovate, to invest, provide consumers choice, and when you do that, you ultimately can win for your shareholders.
And I know you didn't offer any revenue synergies, and that's not at all, but could advertising, I mean, you haven't talked a lot about advertising yet. I feel like your AdWorks has kind of gone under the radar, and you're doing more than meets the eye there. AdWorks
is $1.5 billion revenue stream. It's growing at double digits. It's the combination of the UVerse and the DTV separate efforts, but taking the best of both companies, putting it together, and leveraging it on the 25 million customer base. So that's one. And yes, we're real proud of it. The team's doing great. We've got to keep doing it. $1.5 billion growing at double digits is really, really significant. By the same token, we're a big company, so sometimes it doesn't get the attention that it really deserves. Secondly, with regard to the data that we have within our systems about what people watch and what people see and what they're spending time on watching video, there's a lot of different benefits. One is now the content creators, the Warner Brothers Studios, or the content owners, the Turner Networks or HBO, can now have real-time, real-live data about what people want. So it can make help them make better choices in the choice of shows, in the productions of shows, and the types of shows. It can also help them reduce costs with regard to, you know, a higher success rate means a lower cost for each success. So that's really important. But absolutely, once you have that information, it can get more directed advertising and improve CPMs and make it more effective. You can do a couple of things. One, you can sell better advertising to your business customers such that they can get a lot more value, but you can also use that and possibly reinvest it to make different consumer offerings that are much more attractive from a financial perspective to the ultimate consumer customer. And that's how the consumer wins out of that transaction.
You probably have a lot of data they want, those advertisers. That's interesting. I was just going to end it. You know, AT&T, if you look at, you mentioned enterprise. You also mentioned the economy being tepid right now.
Yes.
In your seat, you probably have better visibility than most CFOs in terms of enterprise spending. You're the number one enterprise company. Now, number three and four have announced a merger to move to number two. What is your view on the economy and the competitive environment in enterprise among the telecom carriers? Obviously, I'm referring to Level 3 and CenturyLink.
Yeah, so a couple of things. One, really, really pleased, and I think it was the right strategic decision by Randall and the leadership to move into strategic services, to move into NetBond, move into Network on Demand, to move into these security products, the VPNs, the Ethernets, all of those next generation products and services. Putting the fiber out there, because what we're seeing is, while the investment, business fixed investment across the economy is very tepid, very slow, what investment is going, people are willing to invest in those. We're getting good growth there, double-digit type growth on a base that's now getting close to $12 billion on an annual basis and growing near double digits. That's pretty darn good in this economy. We believe we're taking share in that place, in that space, and we're optimistic that as the economy turns up, if it does, we will be best positioned to grow it. So from our perspective, that's what's going on. The challenge, though, is like our company, like all companies, are looking for efficiencies. They're looking for cost savings. So some of our legacy products are still facing real challenges. We're real upfront about that, and we'll work through that just like we've worked through that legacy issue with regard to the consumer side as we've really it's become a much smaller percentage of our entertainment group business. We'll work through that the same way on the business side. But from a competitive product set, from a quality of service, and investment in security and speed, we feel very good about our position. It's just we're doing it against a headwind of a very tepid economy. And I think you're seeing that across the board in the U.S. economy and, quite frankly, across the board in the world economy.
Great. John, thank you.
Thank you very much. We appreciate it.
Interesting time to start a conference. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Take care.
Thanks a lot.